Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents After the Abduction by Sabrina Jeffries, narrated by Rachel Beresford. Chapter 1. Shropshire, February 1818. Immortal locks fell forward from the Lord's deathless head, and he made great Olympus to tremble. Homer's Iliad, embroidered by Juliet Laverick on a pillowcase. Lady Juliet Laverick tried to ignore the pounding of her heart, tried to blot out the thunder of horses' hooves on frozen earth, carrying her closer and closer to a confrontation with her past, tried to pretend her hands were icy from travelling in winter and not from her raw nerves. But she couldn't. After more than 2 years, she was finally going to set her past to rest and see justice done. So how could she possibly remain calm, with Charnwood Estate only a few miles away? "That Landbrook Inn was dreadful," came her sister's voice from across the carriage. Rosalind sat beside her husband, Griff Knighton, with a tambour in her lap that she was pointedly ignoring. Juliet leapt at any excuse to keep her mind off the appointment at hand.
"I've never seen cobwebs on top of a mantle before, underneath it perhaps, but on top. And that tankard sitting on the table, did you see the scum in it? That innkeeper ought to be drawn and quartered for keeping such a filthy common room."
"I wouldn't give him quite so harsh a punishment, dearest," Rosalind retorted, "but then I'm not attuned to domestic matters the way you are."
"I assure you," Juliet said, "attuned to domestic matters or not, you'll be ordering the same punishment after a night spent among the bugs under soiled linens. I dearly hope we can avoid returning there."
"It will depend on what the Baron reveals this afternoon."
Griff stared out the window, scanning the quiet Shropshire forest with the wary eye of a man used to trouble.
"If Lord Templemore proves uncooperative, we may find ourselves back at the Peacock's Eye until we finish questioning the townspeople."
Juliet grimaced at the thought. "Surely his lordship won't continue to shield his ward once he hears what Price did to Juliet," Rosalind protested. They both glanced to her, faces full of their usual sympathy and concern. It made her want to scream. She hated being treated as if she might break under the least strain. But that came of being the youngest of three sisters, the only one not yet married, and the only one foolish enough to run off with a scoundrel like Morgan Price at 18, endangering herself and her family, after he turned out to be kidnapping her, not eloping with her. Pasting a blithe smile to her lips, she said to Griff,
"Didn't the innkeeper say that Morgan doesn't reside with the Baron?"
"Yes, but that was as much as I could discover. No one will identify the man in Helena's sketch as his lordship's ward."
Helena was Juliet's oldest sister and gifted with a paintbrush. She, too, had cause to see Morgan brought to justice. But with her first baby's arrival imminent, neither she nor her husband, Daniel, had dared journey to Shropshire. Griff went on.
"Templemore's father might have tarnished the family name and run the estate into the ground, but Templemore himself has an unassailable reputation as a worthy gentleman, so no one in town would speak of him or Price to a stranger."
"But you're sure that Morgan and Lord Templemore's ward are one and the same?" Juliet said.
"I'm sure. The Bow Street runner's evidence proved it incontrovertibly."
"Still, it's odd that a man with such lofty connections would stoop to kidnapping."
"It's Price's lofty connections that make me suspect we've hit on the truth," Griff said. Everyone described your kidnapper as a man of refinement and education, who acted and talked like a gentleman.
He didn't kiss like a gentleman.
Juliet roundly chastised herself for the aberrant thought. Why was Morgan's most annoying characteristic also the one that stuck in her brain? The impudent wretch. After all his wicked behaviour, he'd had no business pressing a dark, shattering kiss on her before riding off into the mist like some careless knight of the road, leaving her behind. Not that she'd wanted to go with him after the way he'd deceived her. No, indeed. A man like that, untrustworthy and treacherous. So what if he'd turned noble in the end, refusing to hand her over to the smugglers he'd kidnapped her for in the first place? So what if he'd fought his way out of the lion's den with her, then left her to her family? He was still a devil for kidnapping her, even if he had asked her to go with him after all that. And he hadn't. Doing so would have been disaster. Who knew what he really was beneath his gentlemanly veneer? She'd seen how well he wielded a pistol. She had no illusions about him now, despite his handsome appearance and deft kissing. Drat it all. She must stop dwelling on that infernal kiss.
"Do you think the Baron will tell you where Morgan's hiding?" Juliet asked.
"He'd better," Griff said, "or I'll see that he answers for it. And once he does, I intend to hunt Price down and punish him to the fullest extent."
Juliet tensed.
"Now see here, you will hold to your promise, won't you?"
When Griff kept silent, Rosalind asked, "What promise?"
Griff looked a jot uncomfortable, not a good sign at all.
Juliet glared at him.
"Griff swore not to duel with Morgan, or drag him back to London for a trial."
"He won't do either of those," Rosalind said easily. "Both would create a scandal that would ruin you, dearest, and Griff would never risk that."
"Griff," she prodded.
"Damnation, Juliet. You know I won't do anything to shame you or your sisters," he grumbled. "But I will see that scoundrel pay."
"As long as you don't challenge him," Juliet said. "I don't care what you do."
Her brother-in-law forced a smile.
"Challenging him would be the height of foolishness anyway. I don't suppose either of you have ever heard of the Templemore cartridge."
The women looked at him blankly.
"It's a device for pistols that combines gunpowder, ball, and priming in one unit. The Baron invented it. When he demonstrated its use in London 6 months ago for the Royal Society, he hit every target dead centre. Since Price probably learned from his benefactor how to shoot, I'm not such a fool as to challenge him."
"I'm sure Griff will handle the matter with discretion and gentlemanly calm," Rosalind remarked, patting her husband's hand.
Juliet caught Griff narrowing his eyes and groaned. She wanted justice, but she'd already put her family through hell once. And though they'd covered up her mortifying elopement / kidnapping without a word of scandal 2 years ago, as long as Morgan remained free, her reputation and thus all her hope for future happiness would never be safe. That had become painfully clear a month ago, when out of the blue, whispers had begun circulating among the wags in London. Hints that she'd once been illicitly involved with a man.
"I don't understand why Morgan had to start spreading tales and dredging up the past after all this time. No one has actually attributed the rumours to him," Rosalind said. "But who else, other than us, knows the truth?"
This latest betrayal wounded her even more than his initial one, rubbing salt in a wound already well salted. How could she have been so very wrong about him?
"No, it's Morgan all right, and when I get my hands on him, I'll make him tell me why, I shall make him stop.
Griff laughed harshly.
How do you propose to do that? Beat him with a duster? Poke him in the eye with an embroidery needle?
Her brother-in-law's condescension made Juliet grit her teeth. She cast him her loftiest look.
I realize that you think I'll take one look at Morgan and melt into a puddle the way I did before.
He doesn't think that at all, Rosalind broke in.
But I learned my lesson very well 2 years ago.
Yes, exactly, Rosalind said softly. That's why we're here. Her sister's compassionate look made Juliet wince, then glance away. At 18, she hadn't minded her family's smothering so much, but now that she was 20, it was near to suffocating her. Undoubtedly, they worried that she'd run off with some other scoundrel if they didn't hover over her. For goodness sake, she'd learned a few things about men in the past 2 years. Before Morgan came along, she'd believed in the essential goodness of people, that if you treated them well, they would reward your kindness with good behaviour. Before Morgan came along, she'd been a fool, kept in blissful innocence at her family's estate, Swan Park. She'd never realised how devious and hurtful and betraying some people could be. It was the one good thing Morgan had taught her. 2 years in society had finished her education. Watching badly matched couples parade through London had constantly reminded her how close she'd come to disaster by believing in Morgan's good character. And seeing the games everyone played had forced her to sharpen her wits for fear she'd say or do something again to shame her family. She was wiser now, more careful whom she trusted. She tried hard not to let her naturally tender heart get her into trouble, even if sometimes she missed the innocent part of herself that had died 2 years ago. Rosalind apparently caught her scowling, for she said gently, "You mustn't fret so. It'll all be fine, I'm sure." Then she tapped her neglected timbre. "Why don't you help me with this? It will take your mind off this sordid business. Besides, I'm at a complete loss as to how to proceed."
"What a shock," Griff said dryly.
Rosalind glared at her husband. "I do have some domestic ability, you know." His smile turned wicked.
"You do indeed. But my favourite is not your needleworking skills, my darling."
With a roll of her eyes, Rosalind held the timbre out to Juliet. "All the same, I'd like to expand my repertoire." Fighting a blush, Juliet took up the timbre. Griff and Rosalind could be so very blatant at times. Determined to ignore their meaningful glances, she examined the puckered fabric, then pointed to some crooked stitches.
"Here's where you've gone wrong. This is supposed to be flames in a forge to represent the god of fire, but you've made it black pudding."
"Not black pudding," Rosalind protested. "It's supposed to be Olympus. I know you sketched the design as Hephaestus, working his forge while Aphrodite stood by, but the god of fire is ugly, so I changed it to Zeus and Hera. It's supposed to represent me and Griff, after all."
Juliet raised an eyebrow. "You can't change designs midstream. It mucks everything up. No wonder you're having trouble."
She began pulling out stitches, no small feat in the weak afternoon light, with the chill air stiffening her fingers. "Besides, Zeus was a tyrant, and Hera a nagging witch. Surely that's no better."
"But Zeus and Hera had children," Rosalind snapped. "Hephaestus and Aphrodite did not."
Juliet glanced up from the timbre. "What does that signify?" Griff looked suddenly stony-faced, and Rosalind inexplicably blushed and glanced away.
"Nothing," she said. "Nothing at all."
How very odd. What was going on between those two?
"I can't salvage this mess now. I'll sketch a new design with Zeus and Hera later, and you can start again."
With a nod, Rosalind took back the timbre and stared glumly down at it.
I honestly don't know how you can bear to do needlework. I find it tedious and annoying.
Which is exactly how I find that Shakespeare you both enjoy so much. But I do like working with my hands. It soothes me.
And took her mind off Morgan.
Drat it all. There he went again, intruding in her thoughts.
They turned off the main road onto a smoother one.
Apparently we've reached Charnwood Estate, Griff frowned. I don't see a house anywhere close. It must be larger than I'd realised. It's difficult to obtain accurate information on a man who buries himself in the country and never comes into society.
As they trundled along mile after mile, Juliet's heart sank. Bad enough that the Baron had the respect of his peers. Must he own half the land in the Shire as well? This didn't bode well for forcing him into revealing anything about his ward.
There's plenty of room here to hide Morgan, Griff remarked.
Plenty of room to hide him, and plenty of wealth to feed him, clothe him, and keep him warm for a decade, Juliet grumbled. I thought you said Lord Templemore's father ran the estate into the ground.
That's what I'd heard. Apparently somebody resurrected it, though it must have taken a fortune.
An understatement, to be sure. Thick stands of pine and oak stood sentinel to the busy efforts of workmen spreading compass on ice-crusted fields. Quaint, immaculately kept dairy buildings gave way to neat, half-timbered tenant cottages. Why, the man probably had his own tannery and smithy and goodness knew what else. Consorting with smugglers and acquiring fortunes go hand in hand, Rosalind quipped. Since Morgan was connected to those smugglers somehow, perhaps Templemore is too. He might have come by his wealth the same way you did originally, darling, by dealing in smugglers' goods.
Very amusing, Griff muttered. But if he did, why hadn't any of the smugglers questioned by the runner ever heard of him? They only knew Morgan, and some of them didn't even know him. If Morgan was ever a smuggler himself, he wasn't one for long.
Soon they began an ascent up a low wooded hill. When they shot out of the tree-bordered road onto a long forbidding drive, Juliet tensed. Worse and worse. Charnwood's grounds were 10 times grander than Swan Park's. The coldly elegant lawns seemed to stretch on forever beneath the wintry grey skies. The formal gardens were tediously beautiful, with gravel paths and dainty bridges knitting together newly turned flower beds and man-made ponds. There was an impressive knot garden and hedge maze too, just to emphasise that the Baron was a man of consequence. As if Charnwood Hall wasn't enough to prove that. My, oh my, oh my. Only a dead woman could remain unimpressed by the sprawling ancient edifice of claret-hued brick. Compared to this stately matron, Swan Park was an upstart at her coming out. Charnwood was the kind of eclectic great house Juliet had fallen in love with on trips to house parties. Pieces had been added here and there. A Jacobean wing stuck onto the Elizabethan core on one end, a Palladian orangery on the other. Dutch gables gilded the sombre brick, and ornate cupolas perched atop the cliff-like towers at each corner of the core. Every generation had stamped its own time upon the building, so harmoniously that, taken altogether, Charnwood Hall both enchanted and intimidated the viewer.
It must require an army of servants, Rosalind commented. It's a wonder his lordship hasn't married yet. Although God help the woman who takes on the daunting task of running that household.
Some women would enjoy it. Juliet's own domestic heart certainly leapt at the thought. The challenge of it all, the accomplishment. Wouldn't it be
positively thrilling to be the one ensuring that it runs smoothly, turning it into a home.
Rosalind raised an eyebrow. Oh yes, thrilling is precisely the word I would have chosen.
Then she turned pensive. The man is unmarried, as I recall. Wasn't he in London when you and Helena first began attending parties? I remember talk of the newly ascended baron, though we never met him. I didn't make the connection until now.
I remember that as well.
Juliet brightened.
Might he have been in town to help his wayward ward? That was right after Morgan fled from Sussex.
We'll know soon enough,
Griff remarked, as they drew up in front of an imposing stone entrance. Their coachman climbed down and scurried to open the carriage door and lower the steps. A footman ran out to attend them, his face marked by surprise. Charnwood Hall clearly had few visitors. If the sudden brutal blast of cold air from the opening carriage door was any indication of Shropshire weather at this time of year, she could understand why nobody visited here in winter. As they descended, they heard shots being fired behind the house, and Juliet wondered if that might explain the lack of visitors as well.
"Is that your master shooting?"
Griff asked the footman.
"Yes, sir," the young man answered. "He always tests his pistol designs on the west lawn this time of day."
"Come on, then,"
Griff told Juliet and Rosalind, as he started off along a gravel path that skirted the house.
"But, sir,"
the footman called out, scurrying after them,
"Mr. Simpkins should announce you."
"No need,"
Griff retorted as he continued on. The footman hesitated, then ran back to the house, no doubt to fetch the butler. Juliet hurried to keep up with her long-legged brother-in-law and sister.
"Griff, are you sure this is a good idea, popping up on him like this?"
Another alarming gunshot split the air.
"I want the element of surprise,"
he answered.
"You want to get your head shot off,"
Rosalind muttered at his side, though she didn't attempt to stop him.
"He wouldn't shoot me in broad daylight before witnesses. That wouldn't be gentlemanly."
His acid tone gave Juliet pause. She wished Griff wouldn't take so much upon himself. She'd never forgive herself if he were hurt. But once Griff set his course, he didn't waver. As they rounded the corner of the massive building, they spotted two men standing in the middle of the lawn, facing away from them. A servant in rich livery waited nearby with a large silver tray. Both men held pistols, but at the moment only one was shooting at the painted wood target set up some yards away. The blonde one who wasn't shooting was clearly the Baron himself. No one but a gentleman of rank would wear such foppish attire, highly polished top boots and spurs, puce Cossack trousers, a tight-fitting jonquil tailcoat pinched at the waist, and a costly top hat. But it was the other man, a younger, dark-haired fellow, wearing a plain black greatcoat and no hat, who made Juliet's heart stammer, then pound. He loaded his pistol, aimed, and then shot at the target.
"Good show," the older man called out. "That was nearly a bullseye this time."
"Nearly isn't good enough," the shooter replied. "This lock needs adjustment."
The voice was painfully familiar, humming through her memory, urging her to quicken her steps. As a wisp of smoke faded into the chill air, the shooter examined the pistol, then set it on a small table holding ammunition. As he moved toward the tray, apparently to obtain another pistol, the servant spotted them and called out,
"Your lordship, someone's approaching."
Both men turned at once. When Juliet saw the shooter's face, her heart stopped. There, before her, was her nemesis. She'd never mistake that iron black hair, those devilish lips, that bold, square jaw.
"Morgan," she whispered.
His gaze widened in surprise and then swept her face. She could have sworn that recognition shone in the eyes that had always been impenetrably black. Unfortunately, Griff heard her exclamation.
Striding ahead of her, he growled, "That's him, the younger one."
"Yes," she replied without thinking.
Griff didn't even break step. Walking up to the man, he raised his fist and punched him in the face. As Rosalind cursed and Juliet groaned, Morgan staggered back. But he did nothing to defend himself. Coolly, he withdrew a handkerchief to wipe away the blood trickling from his mouth. He ignored Griff, who brandished his fists and demanded,
"Come on, you damned blackguard, fight me, or do you only bully women?"
What happened to Griff handling the interview with discretion and gentlemanly calm? Juliet muttered to her sister.
"Hope springs eternal," Rosalind muttered back.
Morgan's companion grabbed Griff's arm.
"Here now, sir, what is all this? Are you mad?"
Wrenching free, Griff pivoted to glower at the older man.
"I regret to inform you, your lordship, but your ward is a scoundrel and a villain. Mr. Price has injured my family, and I shall see..."
"Your lordship,"
the older man interrupted.
"Oh no, you are confused. I am not Lord Templemore."
"Then who is?"
Rosalind burst out. Morgan stepped forward, blood-soiled handkerchief still in hand.
"I am."
As the three of them gaped at him, he flashed Griff an unreadable look.
"And judging from your accusations, sir, you've recently run afoul of my brother, Morgan."
"You're Morgan?"
Juliet blurted out, never so sure of anything in all her life. Then the rest of his statement arrested her.
"Brother? He's not your... that is..."
The gaze he levelled on her now was remote and aloof, showing no sign of recognition.
"I beg your pardon, madam, but I'm not Morgan. I'm Sebastian Blakely, Lord Templemore. I do understand your confusion, however. You see, Morgan and I are not only brothers, but twins. Identical twins."
Griff gaped at him.
"That cannot be. I was informed that he was the Baron's, I mean, your ward."
A pained smile crossed his lordship's handsome features.
"No doubt you were. It's a complicated story."
He straightened to his full height. She'd forgotten how very tall he was.
"But I prefer not to discuss it with complete strangers."
The precise language, the gentlemanly demeanour, the wry smile were all Morgan's. Yet the man was clearly master of the house, judging from the irate servants now gathering on the lawn to form a protective phalanx beside him. It was unfathomable that her Morgan could be a lord. Lords didn't kidnap women and consort with smugglers. Still. Griff hesitated, then bowed stiffly.
"I see that I must beg your pardon and provide introductions. My name is Griffith Knighton. This is my wife, Lady Rosalind, and my sister-in-law, Lady Juliet."
He nodded toward Lord Templemore's companion.
"I assumed from this other gentleman's age that he was Master of Charnwood. So when my sister-in-law recognized you, we both thought that I must be Morgan."
Lord Templemore finished.
"Yes. You have my deepest apologies, sir. I shouldn't have struck you."
"Good of you to admit it."
His gaze flicked to her, then back to Griff, as if looking at her unsettled him.
"Is your sister-in-law the person my brother injured?"
"Yes,"
Juliet answered for Griff, wanting Lord Templemore to look at her again. She couldn't believe his assertions. There was too much of Morgan in him, not only in his looks, but his controlled manner, his refined speech.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?